Thanks, Stu. Thank you, Stu. Would you grab your Bibles, please, and turn to the passage that you will see on the screen there. I won't have the text up there, just the address. So 2 Corinthians 2, starting at verse 14. We're not going to make it all the way through those other verses. We're going to spend most of our time in those those opening verses. This passage is all about smell, which is kind of weird, but smell triggers memories and experiences for good or for ill. Growing up in my house, we were sort of a plain Jane eating family, like sort of meat and potatoes. None of this sort of fancy, spicy stuff. What is sometimes called ethnic food was not really a part of our cooking. It was just not the sort of the stuff I grew up with and really enjoyed. And so Chantel has always had very different taste in cooking, and so sometimes early on when we were married and cooking together, sometimes she would ask me to put together some of the spices that would go on, say, become the rub for the chicken or something like that. And I remember one time where she was giving me the recipe and asking me to mix these spices. And all of a sudden, I smelled one spice in particular, and it just instantly triggered this memory of riding on a bus in Hamilton. It's humid in the summertime in Hamilton, and there was not air conditioning on this bus, and it was packed. And the BO was just awful. It was just completely terrible, but it had a spice to it. And so it's sort of like the spicy BO smell. It was just absolutely terrible. And as I'm mixing the rub for this chicken and I'm adding in cumin, all of a sudden it triggers for me this memory I hadn't thought about in 10 years. And I'm like, why would anyone add this horrible smell to their food? Well, Chantel loves this cumin stuff. I can't stand it. So smell triggers memory. And for some people, it's a really good trigger. And for others, it's going to be a really bad trigger. And that comes up in our passage today. Now, cities in the ancient world, not just humid Hamilton in the summertime, but cities in the ancient world stunk. And you have to know this. They are small, they are walled, which means that everything gets jam-packed really tightly together. And you have animals there. They burn their garbage outside the city, but much of it still ends up in the street. You have people the deodorant hasn't been invented yet, right? You have a lot of people packed into a small space, and it stinks. They don't have good plumbing options because they aren't rich, most of them, right? There's a lot of things happening in a city in the ancient world, and it stinks. So imagine the relief you would feel as you were walking down one of those streets, just wishing to go nose blind from all of the different smells as people are cooking and burning their food and everything that's going on in that city. And then imagine walking down that street, smelling all of that stuff, and then all of a sudden you smell something sweet. Do you know what incense is? Incense, for those of you who don't know what incense is when you add various nice spices together and you burn them. That's the way that they created nice smells in the ancient world. It's sort of like our version of a scented candle, right? Now, they would offer incense to the gods sometimes, but that happened in temples, so it's not really happening as you're walking down your average neighborhood in the ancient world. So imagine finally hitting a breath of fresh air, a nice, sweet smell that covered over all of that other stuff. It would be absolutely wonderful as it covered over the garbage and human waste and the smoke and burnt food. But it would also trigger something for these people. It would trigger a particular memory, a reminder that something was happening there. It would remind them that it's time to celebrate something, actually. These are, as I said, are offerings to the gods. But as you smelled it in the street, it reminded them of something else. It reminded them of something called a triumphal procession, which is essentially a victory parade. So, Aletta, would you put up the image on the screen, please? Here's one artist's rendition. So this is you have your conquering general here in the middle, right? And you've got some of his army, and you've got people who are making music, and they're celebrating over here. And then over here, they are burning incense, right? And this parade would walk through the streets, and it would be a celebration of the fact that this general has just come back and defeated the enemies. So they've got entertainment, they've got dancers and music. They actually would bring along people who would reenact the victory. They would have people who would have painted something, presented visual displays of the epic moments of the battle. They would have actually displays of the spoils that they had obtained as they had won their victory, and they would parade those spoils through the streets. In addition to that, they would have people, their own people that they had rescued from the enemies. They would be bringing them as part of this victory parade going through the streets. Alongside this as well, they also have captured enemies whom they have made slaves. And they're dragging them along in chains behind. So that is all part of this victory procession. So the general's here in the middle or towards the end. He's pulled by four horses. It's a special chariot that they use. It's quite a show that they put on. It's a chariot that's been decorated with gold and jewels and so on. But as I said, they're lighting this incense, the scented candle, right? That smell is just going all through the streets. And it is an absolutely wonderful smell to everyone who is on the general's side. But it's not a great smell to the people who have been captured and are slaves, because they're actually going to their deaths. So it's going to be the smell of life and victory to everyone on the general's side, and the smell of oncoming death to the people who have been captured. That is behind our passage. So, would you rise? We're celebrating a victory, so why not rise? And I'm going to read our very brief passage here. Paul says, "But thanks be to God, in whom Christ always leads us in triumphal procession, and through us spreads in every place the fragrance that comes from knowing him. For we are the aroma of Christ to God among those who are being saved, and among those who are perishing. To the one, it's a fragrance from death to death. To the other, a fragrance from life to life. Who is sufficient for these things?" he will ask. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated. Aletta, would you go to the next visual, please? This is another artist's rendering of a Roman triumphal procession. You're going to see the incense right here. It's not very clear. And right here, you can see the smell going up. I put these visuals online. You can take a look at them later if you want. You probably can't see it from the back. Would you go to the next one after that, please, now, Aletta? Thanks. There are two different ways of reading this passage. And so I'm going to give you both options. I'm going to go with one in the end, but I want you to know, I do try to treat you as mature adults who can make your own decisions about this and at least be aware that some people think differently about certain things as we read them. So I want to let you know about two different ways of reading this. The first one is that Paul sees himself as one of the captured enemy slaves who is going on his way to suffering and death. So in both readings, it's the Messiah who is Jesus, who is the victor, right? But in one reading, the first reading I'm talking about, Paul sees himself as the captured enemy slave who, in Christ's service now, his suffering and death will point to Jesus. Now, suffering, particularly the apostle's suffering, is a big theme in 2 Corinthians. And Paul does at times refer to himself as a slave of Christ. So those are a couple of the reasons for this. If you go with that reading, it means that Paul mixes his metaphors then when he moves on in the passage to talk about smells. We are the aroma of Christ, the aroma of life to life and death to death. So the commentators who would take this view that Paul is referring to himself as a slave say that that's the first metaphor, and the second metaphor has to do with temple imagery. In the temple, they sacrifice, and it is a sweet smell offered to God. Okay? That's one way of viewing this. The second way is the one that I have been suggesting, that this Roman triumph includes smells. It includes this incense, as we talked about. In fact, incense had pride of place in that Roman procession because it was the incense that came right before the general. So those are the two different ways of going with this. Either it's two metaphors, slaves, and then switching metaphor to talking about sacrifice in the temple. Essentially, Paul would be saying that he casts himself... let me go back and summarize. First option says, as suffering and dying slaves of Christ, our suffering and death produces the sweet smell that is offered to God the same way temple sacrifices are. That's option one. Option two is you're sticking with the Roman triumph metaphor all the way through. It casts Paul essentially as not one of the slaves who have been captured, but one of the rescued people, one of the general's people who, when he went out and defeated the enemies, rescued his people, and now they celebrate in the Roman triumph, in this victory parade. And so Paul casts himself as being on the general's side all along. And that in Christ's victory parade, Paul himself is one of the people who would then carry the incense and celebrate the general and what he has done. It's the sweet smell of victory that Paul carries along with him. Two different ways of reading it. I'm going with the second one because I think it makes more sense. It makes sense because otherwise you have to expect that Paul's readers, you'd be thinking that Paul would expect his readers to know he changed the metaphor partway through, but it'd be hard to expect them to notice that he changed the metaphor partway through when everyone knows that these victory parades include incense. Okay? The one metaphor or two. You can talk to me later during Q&A if you want me to clear that up some more. So let's talk about the victory parade. It's victory either way. So let's focus on the victory. What are we celebrating here? What is Paul celebrating? Whom has Christ defeated? What has Christ defeated? What were they rescued from? What are we rescued from? Who are the oppressors? If you go to the next slide, Aletta, there are three answers to this. Sin, death, and the powers. Sin has an effect on people, right? Sin is death. Sin is self-harm. Sin is oppression. We either hurt ourselves or we hurt other people or both. Sin has an effect on the world, right? Sin produces destruction. Entropy, right? The way that the system just continues to slow down and degenerate and things continue to get worse. We're gradually falling into chaos. Sin has an effect on God too. Sin is treason, right? But rather than just leaving those as concepts for us to memorize, let me put it into sort of story form that I think most of us would be able to understand and relate to. So, Sharon is a single mom. Sharon is a single mom who works at a local grocery store. And the local grocery store is feeling pressure because of the competition that they're experiencing with other companies, that they feel that they need to increase their profits and try to save some money. And so what they do is they put in some of those automatic checkouts. And the automatic checkout means that now fewer people need to have jobs. And so Sharon is let go. They let go of three cashiers. Sharon only has a grade 11 education, and money was already tight, and she's a single mom. And what's she going to do now? Well, things are starting to look pretty hopeless. Rent is coming due. She's feeling all of this pressure, and the pain is just starting to build up and build up. And so she's looking for a way to escape, and she escapes the way a lot of people do, is she turns to something. She turns to some drugs. And while she's tripping on drugs, she's walking her son to school at the same time. This does happen in our neighborhood, although this is not, I should pause the story and say, I am making this entire thing up. I'm not actually telling you anything. I'm not telling you someone else's story. I'm making this one up. So she's tripping on drugs, and she's taking her son to school, walking him to school. And she encounters the son's teacher, and she's got a bone to pick with that teacher, and she's not in her right mind, and she chews out the teacher really badly in front of some of his colleagues. Well, the teacher takes it really, really personally. And the next thing you know, the teacher is teaching her son in class, and he starts to ridicule the son and embarrass the son. See how everything's getting paid forward, right? Well, The pain that kids cannot talk out, they will act out. And the son slashes the teacher's tires. The son defaces the property and vandalizes the place, maybe even the church down the street. The son goes home and starts abusing the cat, kicks the cat. Well, animals that abuse get aggressive as well, don't they? And this cat goes and pees all over the shoes in the closet, just destroys them. Continues to pay it forward. The cycle escalates. And now there's just increased tension in the home, right? The son is mad at mom because of what she did at school. Mom's mad at the employer. She's mad at her dealer. She's mad at the way that she's treated her son. The son's mad at the cat. The cat's mad at everyone. Everything just continues to escalate as the problem builds, as the tension heightens. And the cycle just continues to degenerate, right? I'm sure that you guys can appreciate the way we sort of pay sin forward, don't we? The way cycles take on a life of their own. And sin and death and chaos all get wrapped up together. The result is that creation suffers, right? The cat suffers, landfill suffers because of the tires and because of defacing the property. People get hurt and they pay it forward. And it hurts God too. God takes all of that personally because creation is to be cared for and because people are his image bearers. And this, all of this is treason, and it breaks God's heart at the same time. It's this terrible cycle, right? But Christ's victory over sin makes it possible for that cycle to stop at any point. At any point. Christ can deal with the greedy tendencies of the owners of the grocery store, right? He can deal with our tendencies to put money before people. Christ can deal with the addictive ways that we go on to hurt ourselves and try to escape pain in illegitimate ways, right? He can deal with our pain. Christ is someone who comes to take the burdens. Christ shows us how not to return insult for insult and injury for injury and pay it forward. At any point in our scenario, the cycle can be stopped, and that is worth celebrating. It's worth a victory parade, in fact. So that's the first enemy that Christ defeats. The second one is death, because the outcome of that cycle at every point is death. Everything gradually just degenerates in that scenario. It's simply death reaching back from the future into the present, right? And breaking every part of a good life that God gives us, breaking it down. Sin is simply death in the present. The wages of sin is death. Sin is shaking hands with death. We really do need to see it that way. But Christ's victory is over both sin and death. Sin is defeated at the cross, and death is defeated at the resurrection. And this is what Christ offers us. The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Christ. The victory parade that Paul is evoking here celebrates the fact that God is breaking into the present and dealing both with sin and dealing with death and the way they reach and try to join hands. Those are the first and the second enemies that Christ defeats, and it's worth celebrating that too. And the third one is the powers. Operating behind and in our whole school scenario is the fact that things seem to take on a life of their own, and perhaps one of the reasons they take on a life of their own and that cycle degenerates is because they're not operating by themselves. Do you remember in the movie The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's film? Do you remember when the Pharisees and the crowds are calling for Jesus' death, and there's the Satan figure wandering through the crowd the whole time, sort of whispering and inciting people to continue doing what they are doing, right? That we do need to keep in mind that our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's not just people. In fact, it's probably not primarily people, but it's this other thing as well. Jesus says, I saw Satan fall. He says, the ruler of this world has been cast down. Colossians will talk about Christ being enthroned over all of the powers. So maybe to go back to our school scenario, the powers are sort of these invisible forces that are making things escalate and degenerate. It's the powers that are operating behind and through the greed, behind and through the pay-it-forward violence and abuse that continues to happen. But remember in that film, Mel Gibson's film, Passion of the Christ, do you remember what happens when Jesus dies? There's this picture of the Satan figure again, and it's just tearing its garments, screaming as Jesus dies, because it realizes it's been defeated. Right? Christ has defeated sin and death and the powers that escalate and drive all of those things. And this is what Paul celebrates. People are rescued. The oppressors are put down. Life is on offer again. So we celebrate that Jesus has won a victory and that he's rescuing people from this whole cycle of death. And it's the smell of victory. Don't forget the image of the incense, right? It's the smell of victory. You are the smell of victory to the people around you. As you remind people, as you live your life, as Christ empowers you, you are going to be the smell of victory to the people who were caught in those cycles. And that's what Paul goes on to describe. As people encounter the sweet smell of Christ in us, for some of them, it's going to remind them of a breath of fresh air in a horribly smelly city. And for others, it's going to be like the smell of death to them because they're actually benefiting from the oppression, right? The dealers, the people who put greed ahead of people, right? When some people meet you, they are going to associate you with life. And when other people meet you, they are going to associate you with death. And that's part of what God does for us. As we get bound up with being the Messiah's people, as we become more and more like Jesus, people are going to react to us in the same way that they reacted to Jesus. Some of them followed him and really liked him. Some of them killed him. Right? We can't hope for anything better. So let me pause there and ask, are there things that you would like clarified? Does this raise a question for you? Is there something you want to interact about? I don't promise that I have been as clear as I would always like to be, so feel free to say, hey, I didn't get this. Maybe I'm the only one. You're probably not. So what would you like to talk about? What would you like to raise? Thanks for asking that, Meridel. Meridel's question is, how do you share your testimony with others so that they won't be offended at you? Two things that come to my mind. And you guys might have other ways that you'd like to answer this. Whenever someone asks a question, you should be thinking, how would I answer that question? Because I will miss some things. But here are two things that come to mind. Thank you once again for asking that. First of all, I don't think we are always called to share our testimony. That will depend on the specific times when you have perhaps God's leading, intuition. You need to use your wisdom and discernment to decide when is the right time to share my story. And when you think it is, then do so appropriately. Okay? We certainly should do that at times. But more importantly, I think we are to, this passage is calling us to live that testimony. It is simply the way that we live our lives that will be the clue to people that this reminds me of life or it reminds me of death. It's not necessarily your words that are going to be communicating to other people that you are a Christ follower. It's the way that you follow Christ and demonstrate his life. That is going to be the way that people, first and foremost, I think, are going to see that and react to it. And hopefully, as you live your life, you will also earn that privilege of sharing your testimony, sharing what God has done for you. Secondly, you had asked about how do we do it in such a way that we don't offend people. I think that's good to be sensitive about because there are ways that where we can be off-putting to people. We can be, Christians can sometimes be arrogant. And I find that really frustrating because although I think we have a grasp of what the truth is, we still only see it from a perspective, so we need to remember that. So I give you a couple different perspectives and say, you decide, I could be wrong about that. But we need to also treat people with the dignity that says, you've come from a different place and you haven't arrived at your particular conclusions without thinking, because they probably have been thinking through the same things. And then when we can come with sort of mutual respect, then we can have a good dialogue about it. But Christians can sometimes be very arrogant in the way that we share our testimonies, and I would not want that for any of us, because I wouldn't want to be treated that way by a Muslim. But I'd be happy to engage that conversation if they're my friend and they want to talk about what I believe and what they believe and so on. I think we can extend that courtesy to other people. If people are still offended by it, yeah, that's okay. But let's do our part to make sure that we don't put unnecessary stumbling blocks and unnecessary offenses sort of in the way of that good conversation that should happen. Thanks for raising that. Thanks for asking that, Kent. It was verse 8, you said? He ascended on high, he led captivity captive. So Ephesians 4, verse 8. I think that could absolutely be harmonized with this, that Christ, when Christ wins the victory, he wins the victory over all of these things, sin and death and the powers who are operating in all of those, the powers operating in those other two realms. So absolutely, yep. Well done. It's good news. It's gospel. It's good news. Yep. Thank you for that. Did I see a hand down here somewhere else out of the corner of my eye? Wasn't you, Liam? Okay. I could have sworn it was. Well done. Thank you. Thanks for being brave. Yeah, these things happen. You never know when you're going to be called. Cool. Paul ends this section where he's been talking about Christ leading this victory parade and making his people this sweet smell to other people. He says, who's worthy of this calling? Who's worthy to be someone who can stand up and be the smell of Christ to other people? Who is worthy of that? And Paul goes on to answer that in a variety of very confusing ways through the remainder of the passage, and I'm actually not going to get to it, but let me give you the gist of it. Who's qualified for this? Not people who have references or degrees or something like that. That is not what qualifies you. What qualifies you is that the Spirit is at work in your life. If you are a spirit person, if you are someone that God has decided you're mine, you're qualified. If you have the Spirit, you are qualified. It's not who feels qualified, because I'm not sure many of us or any of us would actually put up our hands if I asked, who feels qualified for this? Who feels qualified to represent Jesus this week? I'm with you. Right? My hand is not up. Right? It's not who feels qualified, it's who is qualified. And those are very different answers. Because if you follow Jesus, you are qualified. God's Spirit is equipping you to be someone who will remind others of Christ. That's good news. It really is. Now, some people are going to think that that is worse than the smell of cumin. And some people are going to encounter through you the freshest breath of clean air that they have yet experienced in their lives. And God qualifies you to be that person. I'll leave that with you for reflection.